Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Add to the Bone. Behind-the-scenes information, episode number 18, we had with Dr. Augustine Fu regarding ad fraud was our most successful episode so far. So we try to capitalize on that and dig deeper into the fraud topic. But this time, we wanted to do it from the publisher point of view. So in order to do that, we hosted Yuval Shiboli, who's not only a dear friend of mine, but he's also the Director of Product Marketing and Sales Enablement at GeoEdge, who claimed to be cleaning the internet from bad ads. We spoke about how publishers need and can control the ads that they serve on their own sites, and how they can ensure not only the quality of their ads and the quality of their products, but also the safety of their audiences. Are you Add to the Bone? Then let's begin. So, good morning, Yuval. Welcome to the podcast.
Good morning. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I'm actually super excited to have you today. We talked in the preparation about the episode we did, I think, two episodes ago with Dr. Fu about brand. And, you know, I was sitting and wondering who could be the next guest. And I figured, hey, I haven't spoken with Yuval for a long time. We used to meet a lot more often when we had events in Germany before COVID. And I think that having you here now in that context would be critical because you work for GeoEdge, you work with publishers, and you work with, let's say, some kind of a quality for publishers, fraud prevention solutions. So before we dive into what the company does, let's talk about publishers, right? We said, let's start with a definition. What's the publisher's job as a company? And then even go into the AdOps work and their responsibility for the publishers.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I definitely agree with you. There's a lot of linkage between the conversation that you had with Dr. Augustine Fu and this conversation, because fraud in the industry goes in both directions.
Yes.
There's the fraud that is related to traffic and so on, and there's the second type of fraud that is more of the concern of the supply side or the publishers, that relates to the quality and the security aspects that comes with the ads, naturally, especially on everything related to programmatic, and more so, let's say, open market programmatic.
Okay.
The thing is that the entire industry rushed into, you know, embracing programmatic, but on the way, what we kind of gave up on is having control, as a result, you can see publishers today that, you know, spending a lot of efforts and putting a lot of resources on making their users' experience on site the most brilliant ones that they can have, especially better than their competitors. But like 20, 30, 35% of the user's experience on site is not the content that the publisher has generated. It's the ads themselves.
Yeah.
And then, you know, users log in and onboard the website, and it just doesn't work for them. No matter how amazing the content is, the ad experience can be disastrous. And that, of course, impacts, you know, the retention, the time on site, the engagement with the content, and so on.
Look, so I can say from a user experience, right? If we want to give a more graphic idea, programmatic, we always said that the open exchange programmatic started with the expression remnant inventory. That means publishers used to sell the unsold inventory at night or at times where they couldn't sell it. And then it started becoming mainstream. And then we started talking about the problem of having too many ads above fold, right, which are still the normal banners. And then we started getting the native companies, Outbrain, Taboola, here from Israel, right? And then other companies joined them. And then we got into this endless scroll opportunity that basically opens an unlimited amount of ad space, basically. And we're not even talking about fraud yet, just from a quality. When I go and consume content, the user experience, like you said, has been not the best. I mean, it depends, changes from publisher to publisher, but you've seen a lot of publishers that have taken the way to say, I'm going all in on monetization and I'm going on quantity, not on quality.
Yeah, and that's we see, you know, it's actually very easy to differentiate the ones that are going for quality and the ones that are going for monetization, for revenue. You can see publishers on one hand that are so focused on making money that it's all about, you know, impressions, positions, and you can see 60, 70, 80 impressions per session without any problem. And
it's crazy.
And you can see publishers that are really, really concerned about it and are so cautious with open market programmatic that they are, by definition and knowing that they're doing so, they are limiting their monetization because they are concerned about their quality. And then there are the ones that are in the middle. I think that the main point here is that it's all about not willing to give up the control. Okay, so it's fine to go full steam ahead with programmatic as long as you have the means to control what the users see, what the users experience, because it's, you know, it's your website at the end of the day. It's your responsibility.
The part with the you mentioned that the websites, right? You're basically not controlling the quality of your website. But unlike, for example, Indeed, right, our agency, the website is not my business. It's just like the visit card to my business that describes what we do. For publishers, the website, the content is their shop, is their business.
It's their face.
It's their face, and it's basically it's their product more than their mm-hmm. website. And then when you know, it's imagine the newspaper, you know, that has, if anybody still uses newspapers or magazines, same experience. Imagine that you would only have tiny brackets of text that you can read and not an article with a couple of ads in it. At least that's the feeling that we get. Now, you mentioned the two sides, right? The one that doesn't care, the one that cares. I think we also mentioned it yesterday. I saw a post on LinkedIn from Dr. Augustin Faux that Bloomberg Media, for example, has announced that it's shutting down its open market programmatic advertising, right? So we can see that the big brands, and Bloomberg is a big media name, wants to retain control over who advertises on the website. Now, I don't know if that's the only way to do it. I mean, I'm sure you have more idea about it. But if I'm a publisher right now and I want to start gaining control, I still want to earn money, but mm-hmm. I want to start gaining control and deliver quality experience. How do I do that?
So yeah, so that's exactly the point. What you refer to with Bloomberg right now is a good example of a publisher that is saying, "Hey, I'm not willing to, you know, I'm not willing to live any longer with this lack of control. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go an extra mile to make sure that I do have the control, no matter how much it costs me in terms of monetization." But the point is that there are tools today that can do a very good job by letting you set a policy that is very accurate about what you allow and what you don't allow in terms of ads, quality, security, content, and so on. And you can be very, very granular here today. It's not just about, you know, when vendors like GeoEdge started, the main focus was, you know, blocking the security aspects, blocking the fraud. Maybe we'll talk about it later, but there's a whole range of what we refer to as malvertising, okay, malware in advertising, that is being generated by fraudsters on the demand side and are basically exploiting the programmatic delivery chain in order to spread all kinds of scams and to reach the users. So the main
I think that's an important definition, by the way. That's a really important definition to do right now, because usually when we talk, especially with Dr. Faux, about fraud, we talked about impression and click fraud. We're talking about people that are trying to make money on selling inventory for users that don't exist. But in this case, you're talking about a different level. You're talking about not people that make money off the supply chain of programmatic, but people that take advantage of the supply chain by reaching to multiple people and using malware to, I don't know, ransom or different kinds of, let's say, activities. Or
true. If you look at, I'm always saying that if you look at the programmatic delivery chain from the eyes of a hacker or a scammer or a fraudster or someone with a bad intent, okay?
Yes.
And if you look at the ecosystem that we're dealing with, it's paradise. Okay?
Yeah.
You can reach in a very targeted manner users that you know exactly who they are, where they are, what devices they're using, you know, what's their interests, what age they are, and so on. And you can reach them in a very, very targeted manner with your code, running a code on their device, because that's what running an ad means, right? They're running a code on their device. It's engageable. I mean, users can click on it. They can then be referred to or redirected to landing pages where you can do whatever you want with them once they're there. And you can do that without nobody can detect you, because programmatic works in a split of a second, right? And nobody has control.
Yeah.
So you can do that for several hours and disappear and engage back and disappear, and it's paradise. No one can track you down. It's much more effective than just sending, spam emails, pretending that you're a distant nephew of the person, you know, and you just won the lottery, or grandfather has passed away.
From Nigeria. Wants to ship gold. I think that's most people, even in our industry, don't think about that kind of fraud. And the scale is incredible when you can buy inventory so cheap, although targeted, right? So it's a cheap, yet for them, relatively accurate targeting for them, for the fraudsters. Then when you say a couple or a few hours and then disappear, that's super scalable. They make a lot of money in those couple of hours. It's not like they try, like you said, phishing with like three or four emails and then they disappear. The scale in programmatic is incredible. And we think, like I think of the Western world, right? Germany, US, but you have other countries where the inventory is dramatically even cheaper, and then it's even easier to exploit.
True. And I want to say that, you know, in the early stages, we saw fraudsters focusing on cheap inventory, because at the end of the day, it's all about ROI, right? So you buy the inventory the cheapest that you can get and try to optimize your revenue making based on it. And we can talk later about what kind of revenue making we're dealing here. But what we're seeing today is that some of the fraudsters are actually not ashamed to spend good money on getting to the right users here, and getting the top of the funnel filled with the right prospects. If I would use the sales terminology here, so it's not, and we used to hear publishers saying a lot of times, hey, I'm just raising the floor prices in order to prevent scammers from targeting my users. But it's not the case today. Scammers are actually paying very good money to get the right impressions and to get to the right users with their scams.
It's funny how at the end, they are also advertisers, right? So I don't want to give it a positive note, but if they say, hey, I'm also focusing on my return on ad spend and I can earn enough money or even more money by finding quality audience on higher CPMs, I will also, by the way, if they do it, they understand it better than advertisers. Because one of the points we raised in the previous episode about fraud is that the programmatic market has given the advertisers the feeling that they can live very well within the range of low CPMs, right? But there's a reason why it's low. So if fraudsters understood that there is a higher ROAS sometimes in higher CPMs, maybe, just maybe, that's one of the things that advertisers could also like could follow them into. Not the other crap they do, but at least the understanding that there is good audience and there is value to higher CPMs, and you need to uncover it or discover it and live outside the, you know, the cheap or the penny CPM campaigns.
Absolutely, because you know, as a scammer, you also need a real valid user, real valid traffic in order to run your scams. I mean, bots don't fall into scams, right? Traffic bots. So no. Absolutely, they have to be able to buy real good inventory that is valid to what they're trying to do or what they're trying to achieve, which is scamming the users eventually.
Right. So that's the security problem, right? That's what you mentioned. That's when GeoEdge and an equivalent company started, that was the main kind of focus.
Right.
But you mentioned also another one that was quality, right? So I think fraud is, or what you just described, is easier to describe. But what is it when we talk about quality? So how would you look at low quality ads that are not malvertise or
so? That's a great question, because it has so many aspects here, and it is also changing from publisher to publisher.
Okay.
The first thing that we need to say about quality is there's quality related to the behavior of the ads. Okay. Mm-hmm. The technical aspects of, you know, how does the user experience the ad?
Okay.
Does it play sound when it's not supposed to? Does it pop up? Does it take over the screen?
I hate that.
Things like that. Oh yes. I was talking to an app developer. They have like a weather app, and once you click on the, you know, you click on the front screen to go to the like the 5 days forecast, there's an interstitial ad that takes over the entire screen, and they reached out to me with, you know, they were on the edge of getting a heart attack because the ad started playing sound. One of the campaigns started playing sound automatically. So think about an ad that now takes over the entire screen and your speakers are open and it plays sound automatically. It's like watching those stories with sound on and suddenly you get a heart attack.
But so that's crazy, because the app developer who makes money from the ads, it's not a feature he built in. It's just one of the ads that were playing in his inventory was just started to place. That would freak out the audience. Like, that would make me delete the app and never come back.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and there's hundreds of competitive apps, right? The users doesn't have any sentiments.
Nope.
They just download a different app. So one thing is like the behavior of the ad, like we said, okay. The second thing, which is actually even more complicated, is the content of the ad. We said that, you know, publishers are all about their audiences, right? Matching the right content to the audience or group of readers that they have or users.
Right.
So when you think about it, you know, again, you log as a user, you log into a website to consume a certain type of content, but then the ads have nothing to do with that, with this content. And I'm not talking about, you know, the obvious stuff, okay, pornographic ads or offensive ads and things that are, you know, to most of us would agree that they're offensive. Right.
Things when we talk about brand safety, you know, these are the obvious things.
But then it rolls down into all kinds of different sentiments. For example, if your audience is kids, let's say you're, I don't know, Cartoon Network. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So alcohol ads, of course, that's not a good idea. Right.
Yep.
Tobacco, cigarettes, vaporizers, things like that. Not a good idea. Right. But what if your wine and cigar magazine? Then it's cool. Right. And it's
sure,
the same
that's
ad.
The audience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. OK. What about lingerie, swimwear?
Mm-hmm.
Is it okay? Depending on who you are, right? Depending on who the audience is.
Absolutely. It always depends on the context of the audience and the other content, right? Very hard to define.
Mm-hmm. And that's where publishers, each publisher has their own different nuances and different preferences when it comes to controlling the content of the programmatic ads that run on their website. Think about competitors. Okay.
Okay.
So, you know, some publishers, it's very easy to define who their competitors are. But I was talking to a classifieds publisher once, and they have sections on their website. Okay. So mm-hmm. they have, you know, secondhand used cars and rooms and hotels and jobs and datings. Okay. Now
Everything.
They're saying on the hotels section, booking.com is a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But
right.
on the used car section, I would love to have booking.com's campaign running.
Okay.
Okay. How do you control that in an open programmatic?
That's crazy. It's even the same website, right? It's just a different section.
It's the same
website.
So it means
website. At the end, it's mm-hmm. the same domain, different page, different URL.
Mm-hmm. Maybe a different subdomain, but yeah, absolutely.
So how do we control that? I mean, first of all, whose role on the publisher side, who has, or which role, which department is responsible for controlling these things?
So it all rolls down to the ad ops, to the ad operations teams. And these guys are, you know, poor guys, really. the conversations that we're having with ad ops people, it's heartbreaking.
Really?
Because,
give us an example.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, their job is to make money, right? Is to optimize the yield, optimize the monetization.
Yeah.
And it's not enough that they're, you know, they're stuck at the end of the corridor. Nobody on the publisher's office knows even what they do, right? But these guys are in charge of the ads, and when the ads do something wrong, everybody is blaming them, right? So that's how it starts. As long as everything's okay, nobody really understands what they do, and nobody really cares as long as the monetization is okay. But when
so there's no manual quality control
on programmatic, nothing.
Well, impossible.
There's no way to do it.
Yeah.
What they're trying to do is to define verticals or categories that they allow and don't allow on the ad server. But in reality, let's say that you, as a publisher, you're an ad ops person, and you define that you are not interested in gambling campaigns, and you set the gambling category off on your ad server. Okay. Now I'm an agency with a budget of I don't know, a gambling company. And I know that some publishers block or set off gambling campaigns on their ad servers. So I'm just defining my campaign to be an entertainment campaign, not a gambling campaign. Nobody checks that. And suddenly I pass through all the filters, right?
I love these self-defined categories the same way when we used before contextual, there was topics, right? And then mm-hmm. basically, if you check it, the topics are self-defined. That means that I am a publisher. I can send to the to the RTB protocol whichever topic I believe I'm in, and then get the ads in. So everything that's self-declared is just bullshit, because
right.
you will put whatever
exactly,
you need to get
exactly
through.
That's exactly how it works. It's like, you know, it's like, of course it doesn't work. And when you ask publishers, you know, so how's that been working for you? They're saying, well, it's not actually. And now when a gambling campaign passes through, okay, mm-hmm. and users are complaining, or, you know, users and a lot of the users don't complain, but the editorial teams complain, right? And then the chief editor is bursting into the ad operations office with their, you know, with their mobile device in their hand, shouting out, "Hey, what's this gambling campaign? What's this gambling ad on our website? We don't allow gambling ads here." And now think about the AdOps guys. They need to stop everything, like all their A/B testing, all their work that they're doing, stop everything and try to find out where this ad came from and how the heck to stop it. Okay? And it's impossible. Finding it is impossible and stopping it is even more impossible.
Right. It's like we said before, it's like, you know, IT running, like you running to IT say, "I have a bug," and the IT says, "Yes, show me." Right. Like in this case, the moment that the guy, literally the editor, like cut the newspaper ad, right, comes to you and says, "Here it is." You said, "I have no way to reproduce that," right, or figure out.
And let's say that, you know, the AdOps guys managed to find this ad somehow on their ad server, and they realize that it comes from a certain SSP and they block it. Okay. But tomorrow it will come from another SSP, right?
Right, because it's anyway, impossible. Had their bidding, and you can jump from one to another, and as long as you make money until it's blocked, and then you find the next way. And there are enough endless SSPs. Endless.
Right.
And go ahead.
I'm saying it's impossible to control this monster, this programmatic beast with manual processes. Just impossible.
It in general it's impossible, because everything, that's one of the hypocrisies that we always say, that as long as you have this motivation, doesn't matter what you say about fraud, as long as you're earning from volumes, you have no real motivation, financial motivation, to stop it, right? So you say you have an endless amount of SSPs that the fraudsters or these shit advertisers can take advantage of. And every DSP that you use, doesn't matter what you tick in, tick out, or tick on, tick off, you always have that also box that says, and add every fucking new SSP that joins the party automatically. So unless I really, right, it's all about control. So if I'm the typical programmatic buyer that trusts scale and results, I don't take that box off, or I don't even know it exists sometimes when I'm a new buyer. And that's why it's so easy to exploit, and nobody has any motivation to stop that scale, because they are all earning money from that.
Right. And this is why I'm saying, you know, poor AdOps people, because they're they're stuck, by definition, they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. There's no way for them to really carry this job. And every time this beast that they don't control is doing something that they didn't mean it to do, they need to stop everything and deal with the problem without having the right tools. So that's the complexity of the problem of content of ads. And what GeoEdge and vendors alike are doing today is providing a tool that is, think about it like a goalkeeper, or like a selector in a party, okay? A tool that sees all the ads in real time before the user sees them. Mm-hmm. And based on very accurate policies that the publishers have defined, they're filtering the ones that shouldn't reach to the users in real time.
Automatically,
yeah.
But the point is, yeah, go ahead.
No, basically the AdOps team's responsibility now is not to try and catch the bad ads retroactively or you know, after the shit has already hit the fan. But their role right now is to define and to fine tune the policies of what they allow and what they don't allow.
Right, the technology will do that part, but you, like, the control comes from defining what you accept and what you don't accept,
right?
And then the technology will do its job. But there's always a human definition of what is acceptable. And one question that would come up from that is, you know, about the yield, the not necessarily the pricing, but the total revenue. So when the technology stops that ad from being served, does that happen in the bidding process? Like, would that impression still be fulfilled with another ad, or does that, can that only happen after the kind of bid was cleared, the advertiser won, and then it's thrown out?
Yeah, so it's taking place once the ad, the winning ad, is served to the website.
Right, because you're doing it on the publisher side, so you don't see it until the ad is actually supposed to be served.
Right, but what we automatically do is enable the publisher to replace it or to restart a new auction and bring a different ad that that will fill that space.
So to still catch it, right? So you say, I have now a couple of, that all happens in milliseconds. So the point is throw it out and immediately say, I still have a, like, run another audit, run another auction, sorry, because another there is auction. An available spot here that was not yet fulfilled.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
That's basically how it works. And it doesn't look for, or it doesn't... it doesn't relate to anything that is self-defined by the advertiser. So if we go back to our gambling example from before, we don't care what the agency or the advertiser declared that the campaign is about. Okay, we have our own means and our own ways to identify, to analyze the content of the creatives, to analyze the content of the landing pages, and so on, and to understand that, hey, even though it was declared to be an entertainment campaign, this is a gambling ad. And so we will filter it out if the policy says, if the policy that the AdOps people defined says to rule out gambling campaigns. That's in a nutshell, and, you know, how it works.
Of course, we can, you know, if we were to define here the entire technical process, you know, that would that would take I don't know, days probably, but I think it's understandable. Let me ask another question from a publisher's side. Does it matter? I mean, if I'm a publisher, I probably work with multiple vendors, right? SSPs or even different formats. There's display, there's video, there is native. So I probably work with multiple ones. Does it matter which one, or if I implement it, does it work with all of them?
So that's a good question, because here it really depends on which vendor you choose to work with. Mm-hmm. Generally, yes, the solution supports everything, right? It's part of what we do is being able to understand the context and the content of each ad, regardless of where it came from. So definitely the support, you know, doesn't matter which SSP you're working with, we will be able to detect it and to block it. We know that some of the solutions are lacking, again, not in the, we're not talking about huge blind spots, but some of the solutions are lacking some of the more complicated SSPs, I think part of the responsibility of a publisher is making sure that the solution that they choose is actually one that supports all the ecosystem that they work with.
Yes, and at the end, if there is a blind spot, and it's not one of the main SSPs, right? It's not one of the main ways in which you earn money, because now with header bidding and everything, you usually get access to advertisers. There are almost no unique advertisers, right? So the same way that you have the variety and multiple access points from the sell side, you also have it from the buy side. In this case, you can say, you know what? Maybe you shouldn't work with that vendor, right? Maybe the same way that you choose which categories to allow or not, or which advertisers, you can also say, I'm okay with monetizing through these 3-4 partners. The same way that there's supply path optimization for advertisers, they should probably be also together with companies like GeoEdge or GeoEdge and with manual work to choose my supply side and the buy side optimization, and to not work with any tool or any SSP that there's out there.
Absolutely. One of the main takeouts when publishers start to work with a solution like ours is that suddenly they see kind of a quality score or the quality level of each of their bidders or SSPs. And suddenly, you know, they can say, okay, so I'm used to think about this specific SSP as a very good source of revenue. generation, but it's actually full of crap.
Yeah.
So maybe I should run some A/B tests here to see if, you know, maybe if I stop working with them, my quality raises and it still doesn't impact my revenue. It's always a balance between, you know, quality and security and protection to revenue.
Right. Okay.
But the first thing is to have the right tools in place to have the information to make that educated decision. Otherwise, you know, you're just shooting in the dark.
Understandable. Well, that has been super insightful. I always like to say we've been recording for 35 minutes and we kind of said, you said that you dislike our longer episodes. And I think that's something that we try to stick to find shorter and more, let's say, snackable content. Is there anything at this point that you didn't have the opportunity to say that's important for you to say, or any... We always give the guests an opportunity to ask something or give a tip to their publishers, to their potential, you know, clients. Now is your opportunity.
So yeah, so I'm saying we started with all the vendors started focusing on protecting or preventing the malvertising side, and then the next frontier is controlling the content, And I think the last tip of this umbrella of protection is to have a tool that enables you to deal effectively with users' complaints. If we go back to that scenario with the chief editor bursting through the door with their phone, usually when you ask publishers, you know, today, what do they do when the chief editor is complaining, or when a user sends a screenshot, or God forbid takes a screenshot, posts it on Twitter and tags the publishers, right, which are things that we've seen happening, how they deal with it, they describe a very manual and painful process. And again, vendors today have a, some of the vendors today, us included, have the option to enable users to report bad ads directly to the publishers. So when a user, you know, you see an ad today and you have this ability to report, if you don't like the ad, you can report it, or you can report on it, but you would usually find yourself reporting it as a user to Google. That doesn't help the publisher.
Right? No, that doesn't help anyone, by the way. I don't think so.
Right. what we're enabling publishers to do today is to replace this with a feature that enables the users to report the bad ads directly to them. And now they get a notification about the ad with a clickable button that can enable them to, if they choose, again, not every time that a user reports a bad ad, the publisher has to automatically block it. But if they choose to block it and to remove it, they can do it with a click of a button and it will be effective across their entire ecosystem. No matter which SSPs this ad will come from, it will be blocked from now until forever.
Right. So it's both hunting and fishing. So if I see the opportunity and I know that there's something that I don't like because somebody flagged it, I have the opportunity to actively act against that specific advertiser.
I like the way you phrased it. Yes.
Okay. No, but I think it's important, like you said, because it's not only the automated tool that covers the scale, but also if we do take the example that something slipped through the cracks, because there's always innovation from both sides, then you still have a tool that allows you to kind of understand it, which in your example before you couldn't, and kind of reverse engineer it or record it and go in and make sure that doesn't happen again specifically for that action.
And suddenly it closes this kind of a closed feedback loop with your users, because up until today you were building all kinds of policies based on assumptions, based on what you thought that the users would like or wouldn't like to see. But now users can actually tell you, hey, we're not happy with this ad. Please take it off. And you have the tools to do it. It's amazing.
And it's more than that, right? It's just an idea that came to mind. But if we talk about the open web and the fact that it needs to be financed through ads, right? Because most people are not willing now to pay for something that used to be free, then there is still an opportunity for you not only to control from fraudsters or like really shit things, but also we gave the example of the bikini, right? Of the swimming suit, right? Maybe I would say that in a business environment like Bloomberg, for example, I wouldn't mind. But if many people would kind of report or use that tool to report and say, this doesn't fit for us here, then again, we talk about quality from a context perspective. Our audience dislikes that, but they're okay with, I don't know, cigarettes ads or anything else. Fine. You know, then it's not only the bottom part of like killing the junk and the unsecured stuff and the fraud, but it's also an opportunity to really improve, you know, like the positive way to make a jump and improve the ad experience of your product.
Get the feedback from your audience, get the feedback from your users and fine-tune your policies as you go. Absolutely. That's exactly it. And suddenly it's a tool not only to filter out bad ads, but to communicate with your audience about their preferences.
Amazing. Yuval, I couldn't be more thankful. It was a really, really enlightening episode. And I'm really sure that the publishers that are listening, and if we have only buy side, this will definitely be an opportunity for publishers to listen. Thank you very much for being here.
Sure. Very, very happy that we had this conversation and looking forward to seeing you not through the web, with some, you know, a glass of beer in our hand.
Absolutely. So what we said is the moment I click stop on the recording, you and I are going to continue to find a time slot to have a beer together and then prove to the digital ecosystem that we actually do know each other and we're not just pretending for the recording. Thank you, Val. Take care. Thank you for listening to another episode of Add to the Bone. If you found this topic interesting and you haven't done it already, go and listen to episode 18 with Dr. Augustin Fo. Right? I said it in the intro, but I'm just saying, if you haven't had the chance, go and listen to it. They're connected. And if you listen to both of them, they'll give you a 360 overview on the challenges of fraud in the digital advertising industry from both sides of the advertiser and the publisher. If you find our content valuable, share it with your colleagues, bosses, whoever you believe will find it valuable too, and will enjoy it as well. As a reminder, you know we're an independent production of Indeed by now, and our goal is to deliver value to the community. So if you want to support us, if you want more content and better content, then spend, please, the next 10, 15 seconds, go to your favorite podcasting app and rank us 5 stars, you know, so we can find new audiences, grow, and just improve our ability to deliver good content to you. Thank you very much. Until next time.